most in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Welcome to Spouting Off on a Friday. So good to have you along on this, the end of the week, TGIF. There's lots of things. I was searching and searching for the Good News Friday edition of Sidney Powell's great newsletter, but I didn't find it. I sure hope that there is good news. One, there's always good news. We've got to look for it. Sometimes you got to scrounge for little bitty bits of good news. But one of them, I think we could say, is that this confab, this get together, this annual meeting of the World Economic Forum ended, and I think it got more notice, more media attention than I think most of those meetings have gotten in the past. You've got the perfect Dr. Evil. He looks like Dr. Evil, Klaus Schwab. And they deserve mockery. They deserve our disdain, because even when their rhetoric somewhat covers up what they're talking about, their actions tell the story. And that is that these self-appointed dictators that nobody elected, nobody said, oh, let's put them in charge of globalism. They're trying to impose globalism, actually global socialism, on the world. Much of what we are watching, the crazy, insane stuff that we are watching, is a part of that plan to turn formerly free countries, national companies, where, you know, boundaries are good. One day I'm going to have to talk about my love for boundaries, because boundaries is what communists don't want, except to keep freedom-loving people out and slaves in. Think about the Berlin Wall and how it was that it was one of the best examples, one of the best scientific experiments on what happens when you split a country in two, which happened to Germany after World War II, and you support freedom, free markets, freedom of speech, any kind of liberty in West Germany, and impose socialism / communism, part of the, what we used to call years ago, the satellite countries of the old Soviet Union. The Soviet Union has changed quite a bit since the Berlin Wall came down, but the Berlin Wall was. It's too bad that young people do not understand the significance of the Berlin Wall, how important it was that it came down during Ronald Reagan's time, I think it was, yes, when he demanded that Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall. And in America, when America it was an accepted thing that America loved personal liberty, personal freedom, dissent, disagreement, reverence for free speech, and horror, absolute horror, of the government control of thoughts, ideas, and speech. Can you imagine your parents? I don't know how old you are. There's lots of different audience members here, but if you're of a certain age and you remember, can you imagine your parents, mine are deceased, watching the reverence, the elevation, and the rise of censorship in these United States of America? You cannot have globalist socialism without a constant control, manipulation, and censoring of dissenting opinions. It's at the very heart of freedom, liberty, and God-given rights to live your life as you see fit. I won't go down the direction, which I always do, of the consent of the governed. It doesn't mean you can do anything you want. It means that we have laws that are expressly, I am going down that road, we have laws expressly designed in the Constitution to protect individual freedom. So we consent to be governed so that other people will respect our rights to free speech, freedom of movement, freedom of religion, freedom of the press. These are the things that are under attack. And these are the things that are brazenly being attacked by a group of elite, arrogant, baby doc dictators who are, because they have millions and billions of dollars, don't think that they have to live by the repressive, freedom-sucking agenda that they want to impose on the rest of the world using fear-mongering. Oh, the weather, the climate change, the COVID, all of it. Whenever you see these people and their minions in the propaganda media, fear-mongering, being hysterical, Chicken Little. I urge you to go listen to Al Gore's speech. Who? Al Gore. He's still around. He's still predicting doom. He's still saying we need money, 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 money. No, that was John Kerry. To fix the weather. What arrogance, what hubris. These people aren't interested or fearful of the weather. After all, they did come to Davos in their private jets. And of course, all of their demands and edicts and retooling and toppling every nation around the world, they're not worried about all of that. What they're worried about is control. That's what it's always about. It's about control. So I urge you to listen to some of these speeches if you can stand it. And more needs to be done. We can't just laugh and mock. The other thing that I encourage you to do, is go to my Twitter page. And now I am using Twitter more because I have reason to believe it might actually be a little bit freer forum than it used to be since Elon Musk came along. Now, I do not think that the dictators at the World Economic Forum were all that happy when Elon Musk bought Twitter. That doesn't mean that I know that much about Elon Musk to know just how pro-liberty he is, but I judge people by their actions, not their words. And by his actions and the fact that he allowed an independent journalist like Matt Taibbi and others to look into the records at Twitter, it seems to me, I think it's fair to speculate, that this is one of the reasons that Elon Musk bought Twitter. Let's face it. Word on the street is that he didn't make a very good deal. Word on the street is that he overpaid for Twitter. Word on the street is he ain't making any money on Twitter. But what he is doing is he's exposing the tyranny that was a part of Twitter all along. The Twitter files are utterly fascinating. It isn't just that Twitter was controlling and manipulating news, manipulating the public forum known as Twitter, and deciding who could be heard and seen and who couldn't. I mean, that's an outrage. They had to hide their hiding, right? Most conservatives knew that they were controlling and manipulating and censoring certain ideas. What they didn't know is that It was all done with the collusion and at the direction of our very own government. Now, you remember when the radical left said, well, it's a private company. They could do whatever they want. Well, that was a lie. When a private company takes orders from a government entity whose express constitutional requirements are that they do not control and manipulate speech. They do not show favoritism of religion. They do not interfere with the freedom of the press. They're blatantly violating those principles. Then guess what? That entity is no longer private. It's a government entity. It's something that some people call corporate fascism. Anyway, I'm running out of time. So at my Twitter page, and I encourage you to follow me on Twitter. I never, ever do that. But it is very interesting that I'm about 75 or more Twitter followers, more than I had for the last 6 years in which it was totally frozen. On my Twitter feed, and my Twitter feed, I should tell you what it is. It's my name. It's at Karen Cataline. If you know how to spell my name, it's that on all of the social media I use. And I am using less social media than ever, although I am tweeting, tweet. Scroll down my feed and look for a January 18th post. They pushed it on the world. This is the headline. Every person in the world needs to see this. The arrogance, the reckless disregard for human life and human liberty. We're living in a bad sci-fi movie. What am I talking about? There's a video that I posted, and it says Ezra Levant and some journalists from an outfit called Rebel News chased around Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, at where else? The Davos yearly meeting of the World Economic Forum. Now, why would a CEO of Pfizer be there? You tell me. These reporters chased him and asked him 29 questions, which he refused to answer. Don't worry that he refused to answer. The questions are the answer. It's the first time this guy has ever been asked that question. And Elon Musk cheered these reporters for doing so. So I cheer Elon Musk for cheering them. Ah, it is great news. See, Good News Friday. There you go. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off. We'll have a great guest right after this.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Not too long ago, it felt good to withdraw your cash from the bank, didn't it? For a vacation or a new car. But today, withdrawing your own cash has become risky. Pat Boone here for Swiss America. According to the Secret War, a Swiss America white paper, I learned that all banks are now required to spy on you and me for the government and then report any financial behavior deemed suspicious or unusual. You must read The Secret War. It's free.
Thanks, Pat. Call now, toll free, 866-883-2741. That's 866-883-2741.
Truth is, I believe the government's new war against cash is really a war against us all. But the secret is now out. So please, Get and read The Secret War.
Call now, toll free, 866-883-2741. That's 866-883-2741.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Karen Cataline got her parents to name her Karen before she was born, so she could grow up to be a punchline. Now here's more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
And I got something to tell you, and I don't think that you like it very much. It's not a
car. Well, welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. I'm your happy host, Karen Cataline, and we are delighted to welcome our very first guest. Her name is Janet Sanders, and she has a website, Me. X-I-N, oh, me, G, no, winfo. I'll have to ask her about that. She has a story of many Mexican authorities. We're going to talk to her about Biden going to the border. Did he really see the border? What did he see there? Janet Sanders has the answer. Welcome to Spouting Off, Janet. Good to have you on the program.
Good to be here, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's Friday.
it's no not kidding. Just that. And it's so good to hear your voice. The site, my girl, is MexinoInfo.com.
You know,
it's all the information they don't want getting out. MexinoInfo. It's a great site. Go check it out.
MexinoInfo. I'm going to spell it out for people. M-E-X-I. I was thinking it was Xi, you know, like Chinese, Xi Jinping, MexinoInfo.com. Tell us about the presidential potted plants visit to the border. That's what I call it.
Man, let's take a deep dive into this. And I'm so glad you asked that question. It's a great place to start. You know, a lot of folks watched that visit to the border and they think it was the whole story. So as we go through this, I want you to imagine that what we're going through is a movie. And what you saw was a snapshot. So let me explain what you really saw. When Biden showed up at the border, you noticed, and I think everybody did, how antiseptic and cleaned up it was. Right? Mm-hmm. President Biden didn't do that for us. Biden did that for AMLO. All right? He didn't want to embarrass this president. You don't think for a second that anybody who saw that cleaned up version of El Paso actually believed it. I think everybody knows what's really going on. We're watching it daily. But think about what was going on. Just days previous, the Mexican army had picked up El Chapo's son. They call him, in Mexico, they call him El Raton. And El Raton was supposed to be given to the United States, and it was supposed to happen on that day that President Biden came across the border. So President Biden goes to the border, and he doesn't want to embarrass AMLO. AMLO's got a gift for him. It's going to make him look like he's doing something. And then he got to the meeting in Mexico City. So now let's look at the next snapshot. Did you hear how the president of Mexico spoke to an American president? Did you listen to that?
Tell us. Yeah, tell us.
He basically told Biden, you're not doing enough. You don't give us enough money. And Biden, he pushed back a little bit, but then what he said is we're going to make it easier at the border. So AMLO wasn't there to work with President Biden. What you saw the president of Mexico do was tip his hat to the cartels. We have no intention of turning over Gustavo. We have no intention of working with this U.S. president to stop anything. They're making way too much money. Gustavo Chapo, El Chapo's son, was actually his cartel, Los Chapitos, was responsible for 25 kilograms of fentanyl every single month. That's just one cartel. The Sinaloa cartel that his father ran is run by an even worse guy, Maya Zambada. And Maya is pushing even more. So if this government actually wanted to do something about the cartels, they could. But what you saw that a Mexican president do was basically tip his hat to the cartels. Then look what happened. We never got Gustavo, hard name to say. Right. We never got El Ratón. As a matter of fact, they've got El Ratón today in Altiplano. Altiplano is the same prison that his father escaped from. And then a federal judge came in and said, no, you're not going to extradite him. But then you had to see what happened with the cartels when they picked him up. And I don't know if you know this. A lot of people didn't see this because a lot of the news from Mexico doesn't make it up. But I was down in Mexico the first time they caught him. Ovidio Guzman. First time they caught Ovidio. Did you know that they had caught his son 2 years ago or 3 years ago in 2019?
You are a wealth of information there.
So I'm down in Mexico. They're all on Facebook. They were live streaming it. It was
really
Karen. I couldn't believe what I was watching. So the National Guard goes in. They surround the house. They get Guzman out of the house. And he comes out, okay, I'm coming. And the camera followed him because the whole town is turned out. So the military grabs him. They put him in the truck. They drive down the road. They don't even get two blocks down the road. They are completely surrounded by cartel members in pickup trucks with U.S. military-grade weapons, 50-millimeter guns on the back of these trucks. And the guy steps out, and he tells the head of the military, you're going to turn this kid loose. Because if you don't, we're going to kill you. And when we're done killing you, we're going to go to your homes. We're going to kill your wives. We're going to kill your children. Then we're going to go and kill your parents. We're going to kill your cousins. We're going to kill your aunts. We're going to kill your neighbors. We're going to kill your animals. Turn the kid over. And they turned the kid over. He's never come to the United States. And what's even more frightening, if you look at the whole movie, these guys all chatter online. So if you follow the Los Chapitos feed right now, what they're talking about is if they ever get El Ratón into the United States, all the cartel has to do is kidnap a busload of Americans or take a hotel with Americans in it and kidnap all of them because they know President Biden will trade them. He traded the Merchant of Death for Brittany Griner. They think they can get El Chapo and his kid back for a busload of Americans. It's a very dangerous and trepidatious situation we're in over there. But Biden has no idea what he's doing.
Apparently not. And also, some of the policies are in the exact opposite interest of the United States of America. I mean, that trade in Russia was no American president I can think of would ever do anything like that and turn turn a killer
the merchant
back and let him go if he cared about American lives, would he?
Absolutely not. But, you know, our State Department has got some very misplaced priorities. As a matter of fact, if when you go to the website, what prompted all this was I finally realized I'd been down in Mexico for, I was pushing on a decade, and I was probably the biggest cheerleader of Mexico. There are some wonderful things about Mexico and wonderful people. But with the advent of COVID, the tourism dried up and people have gotten very, very hungry. You also have this influx of these men coming to the United States that need to, for lack of a better word, work. And what they do is they partner up with the police and the cartels. And the police and the cartels are now working together. It was actually, are you ready for this, Karen? A year ago yesterday, they attacked my house. My house was invaded by 40 cartel members, and they came in with the Yucatan State Police. And they held us hostage for 22 hours. They stole everything they could get their hands on, and what they didn't steal, they burned or they murdered. They were killing every animal they could find. It was It was the most.
You're saying your house? This happened to your house?
This happened to my house. As a matter of fact, on the Mexino website, I actually put a couple videos up. You can see what we were looking at. And when you look at those men attacking my home, I want you to look at the boys crossing this border. The good people in Mexico aren't coming to the United States. I lived in a little tiny fishing village. There was a woman there, her name was Betty, and she was married to Renan. And she would never come to the United States. Their family, their churches are there. Armando, Juan Carlos, Patti, Guadalupe, all the people I know there, their families are there, their churches are there. They don't make much money, but their lives don't revolve around money. When you get together with them and you drink beer at night, they all say, we live in the glory. They would never come to the United States. What we are seeing crossing this border is the worst of the worst. And the fact that we are turning a blind eye is so very dangerous for Americans. But I don't think Americans are realizing what's happening as these people are coming through. They know it's easier to get across the border if you have a child. And in these small villages, you get these thugs coming through, and they will literally rip these little girls and these little boys out of the arms of their parents and kidnap these children. Right? They get them across the border. They're either murdered or they're trafficked. This is an ungodly, unholy and dangerous situation we have going on. And the fact that this administration allows this to continue has led me to the conclusion that this is intentional. They want this. It's evil.
So then the question is, you're right ahead of me, that my favorite question, why? Why do they want this? Why?
I think it's two things. If you look at the people in our country today, people aren't happy anymore. People aren't nice to each other anymore. We've seen families disintegrate. I think that adding to that chaos suits their narrative is the first thing. The second thing is, I think they're going to push to legalize all of them, and they hope to make them their base of voters. I think they're losing the black base because more and more black Americans are starting to realize what a sellout the whole Democrat platform has been for them. And they're starting to leave, as Candace Owens says, they're starting to leave the plantation.
Leave the plantation.
So they've got to replace that.
Right.
They got to replace that base. And how better to do it? So, but what they don't realize, and this is the frightening part, these people coming across the border, Karen, aren't coming across to assimilate. It's not because they want the American dream. Their loyalties are back to Mexico and to the cartels that got them here. These young men come across these borders and they're joining gangs. They're muling fentanyl. They're trafficking children. They're not coming here to assimilate. The few of them that come here to work and work illegally aren't spending their money and paying taxes here in the United States. They're sending the money back to the country they came from.
Always have. That's always been the case, hasn't it?
It's just awful. You know, but the narratives that I see just blow my mind because everybody in Mexico knows what the truth is.
Yeah, and a lot of Americans don't, even though this administration is brazenly violating the most basic of federal laws, and that is to keep our country safe and secure. I'm on your website, and I just want to point to that for everyone, Mexino Info.
And, yeah, Karen, while you're there, go to my story and look at that video. Try to describe what you're looking at.
Well, I can't do it while I'm online here with you, but I wanted to ask you, I will though, and I encourage everybody else to do it too. I'm looking at your open letter to the Yucatan governor, and you're talking about a Mexican citizen, Joe Zamora, and his American wife. That's you, Janet Sanders. So you're married to Joe Zamora.
Correct.
Talk about that, because I didn't do a very good job of talking about your background and your biography.
Well, okay. I'd love to talk to you about that.
Please.
Where do I start? So let's go
back
a little bit.
4 minutes, unfortunately.
Make it quick, Karen. If you had ever told me that you and I would meet under these auspices and have this conversation a couple decades ago, I would have never believed you. I was dancing in Vegas. I met one of the Oak Ridge boys. I'd run off to Nashville and married him. I was doing the whole country music superstar thing.
Oh,
and then my husband died. And when he died, he died without a will. And they came out of the woodwork. And I went back to Colorado broken and brokenhearted and destroyed. And I started this beautiful little company out of the back of my house. And this company grew. Well, it might not have been a child of my body, but it was definitely a child of my mind. And I grew it and I grew it and I grew it. And I am walking, living, breathing proof that the American dream lives. And as we were always taught, you know, you work hard, you play by the rules, you get to go and do wonderful things. So I worked hard my whole life, and Joe and I had been looking at property all over the world. We wanted to go get a little place on the beach and open up a little restaurant, and that's how we picked Mexico. And the way we got scammed is we rented a property from an American who was living down there by the name of Adam Kowalski. He had a construction company called Casa Yucatan Construction. We trusted the guy, spoke English. Him and his wife had the property. We rented it from him. We started putting all of our building materials, our vehicles on this property, getting ready for our own property. Right before we were getting ready to move out, I'm going to give you a couple names. Zaiden Ojeda, he runs the Yucatan State Police. Adam Kowalski's wife is Gabriela Ojeda. So before we could move out, they showed up with the cops, and this woman got out and said she didn't know us. We were squatters. Everything on the property was hers.
She
wanted our vehicles. She wanted our motorcycles. She wanted our office. She wanted all of our building equipment. She wanted the food.
How
she wanted
that?
The dishes. She wanted. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life. We were fortunate enough. The police looked at the rent receipts, the police looked at the lease, and her husband had been the only one who signed the lease. She told the police she didn't know her husband.
I got about a minute. Sorry.
Okay. So
go ahead.
When they couldn't get away with that, she went back to the Yucatan State Police. They came in with 40 chokes and said, "We're going to rob you." And that's exactly what they did. But they came in and they tried to kill us. They did it with the Yucatan.
You got to write a screenplay based on a true story. You got to write
I'm almost done with the book, and this is where I'm going to leave it. We were desperately calling the embassy. They kept telling us to call the police. We were telling them it was the police doing this to us. They said, "Too bad, you are on your own. If you go to Mexico and you are attacked, you better be prepared to fight your way out, because that's what we had to do." 22 hours of throwing Molotov cocktails and brawling with a bunch of Mexican thugs.
This does sound like a movie. We're going to have to leave it there and direct everybody to Janet Sanders' site. You can probably read more, hopefully, to her site, mexinoinfo.com. Thank you so much, Janet, for joining us. Glad you're home safe and sound, and keep on speaking out. We appreciate
it. Karen, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more on Spouting Off. Don't go away.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. They're not out to tell you the truth of what's happening. They're out to tell you the picture of the world that they represent. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in facts, and prevent people from being misled. The Epoch Times is independent. We're not controlled by any special interest, and we never will be. This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would ensnare this country in ignorance, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth. Subscribe today to our digital edition at theepochtimes.com and join the Americans who are seeking truth and tradition. Read The Difference on all your devices. We'd love to have you on board.
Are you tired of the same old snacks? Looking for something a little healthier than that bag of chips or candy bar? Even your average bag of trail mix these days is little more than peanuts, raisins, and candy-coated chocolate. Not very healthy, is it? Allow me to introduce you to White Mountain Munchies. Made from 100% all-natural ingredients, White Mountain Munchies combines unique flavors with nutritional value that will tingle your taste buds and strengthen and sustain your overall health and wellness. eating good never tasted so good. From Maggie's Maple Madness to Hannah's Heavenly Harvest, Grayson's Getaway Goodies, and our limited edition Christmas blend, Jacoby's Jolly Jumble, White Mountain Munchies offers nutritious and delicious snacks that the whole family is sure to love. Pick yours up now through our easy-to-use online store at whitemountainmunchies.com. White Mountain Munchies, non-GMO when you're on the go.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fat Lash Food Police in the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fat Lash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
I had to let that play a little bit because you can't interrupt 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, can you? Thank you for staying with us and helping us wrap up the show here on Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline. If you'd like to access the archives of the Spouting Off, all you got to do is either go to my website, KarenCataline.com, or you can go to WSMN.live, and there are loads of shows of Spouting Off. And it's time, yes, it's time, this time of year, we got Congress fighting about how many billions and trillions and gazillions of dollars of our money that they want to spend. And we're going to talk about that with Peter Early. I hope I'm saying that right. I think he'll correct me. He is an economist who joined AIER in 2018. Prior to that, he's spent over 20 years as a trader and an analyst at a number of securities firms and hedge funds. He has been quoted by the World's Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Reuters, CNBC, Grants Interest, Rate Observer, NPR, and numerous other media outlets. Not only that, on top of everything, he is has a BS in engineering from the United States Military Academy at West Point. Thank you for your service, and welcome, Peter Early, to Spouting Off.
Thanks, Karen. It's Earl, but other than that, all the information was right.
I was going to ask the producer to ask you how you pronounce your name, and I was thinking, well, I'm 50-50. It's either Early or Earl.
Right.
And for our listeners, it's spelled E-A-R-L-E, Earl. Thank you for joining us. So the government is, the Congress is fighting about the spending and the debt ceiling. What do we need to know about that?
Right. So Americans are being increasingly subjected to this charade over the last few
years.
Basically,
many.
The debt ceiling... Sorry?
Many charades.
Oh,
yes, go ahead.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. So the debt ceiling is basically a legal restriction on the amount of debt that we can incur. It's important to know, though, that basically this is not about – this is a forward-looking issue, right? It's not about the amount that we can incur in terms of bonds. It's about the – it's basically the equivalent of taking a loan to pay your bills. And this gives you an idea of how poorly run American government finances are. We basically assume the bills and then see if we can pay for them. And that's what this is. And one way of showing one side, showing the other side that they don't approve is by of some of the bills that have been assumed and where some of the funding is being directed is by digging in their heels when there comes time to pay the bills. So that's what we're seeing right now.
Yes, and you know, we used to expect that Republicans would dig in their heels a lot deeper and say, we can't afford this. This is not right. You're spending irrational amounts of money. They passed a $1.7 trillion, I don't know what it is, you can tell us, right in the dead of night, right before the new Congress came in, the new House of Representatives, this whole supposed to hold the purse strings. And we can't depend on Republicans to put their foot down anymore, it seems, can we?
No, unfortunately, we can't. The age of the fiscally sober Republican or, you know, even moderate conservative, I think, is gone. I think, you know, when it was realized at some point, and we could probably write a book on where that point might have been, but when it was realized at some point by mainstream Republicans that Democrats were winning, or just the ideological left was winning a lot of support by spending money on programs that were popular, I believe they said, if you can't beat them, join them. And I think that's what we see right now. Now, they still do this sort of charade or mini charade, I think you're right about that, with respect to digging in their heels. But Republicans have a lot of constituencies as well that want to push through their pet projects and all that. So it's hard to imagine how long this will last. A lot of it is just signaling, but ultimately, there'll be some resolution because both sides wind up losing if this goes on for too long. And if, you know, parks wind up getting shut and all that sort of thing, that's usually what winds up happening.
Can we really ignore what a lot of everyday citizens suspect? And that is a lot of this money that the government prints is finding its way into political payola and into the pockets of the very politicians who have a vested interest in spending the citizens' money. Case in point, how many times do we see that many politicians go into Congress worth one thing, and then they serve for a few years to, oh my God, decades? And they're millionaires. They're gazillionaires. How does that happen? And why aren't people asking that question more often?
Well, I mean, there's a few reasons. As to how it happens, I mean, one of the things is that until recently, and I think it might actually have been carved out, until recently there was no prohibition on insider trading for members of Congress. So if they would meet with constituents, and if those constituents included high-tech companies or other major corporations, they might be told, yeah, we're going to, you know, have this new innovation coming out, or our earnings are going to be good, and they could trade ahead of them. I mean, the classic case of this is Nancy Pelosi. But as for
Hillary Clinton. Remember her stock deals? Just like
I remember that, but I also remember her what was it? Was it pig bellies or pork bellies trade?
Pork
that was
bellies,
amazing.
One
trade that made over $100,000. I was a trader for years, and I never had a period where I made so much in one single trade. So maybe I should have been learning at her feet. But
she's an expert. Yes, she is.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. as for why people aren't noticing this, I think there's two things. I think, first of all, there's a bit of I'm not sure people know the questions to ask, or maybe they've been there's a little too much mythology about the moral high ground that our political officials occupy. But also, I don't know if people know the right questions to ask. I mean, looking at what politicians do, and if they were to make public, for example, I would love to see the visitor's record to any particular public servant's office, senator, Republican, senator, representative, whatever. I think if that were published online, that would be very interesting. And I think people would, seeing that, they would start to ask more questions about what exactly is happening in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. You said, you gave me the perfect opening. You said people need to ask the right questions. Tell us some more, if you can, about the kind of questions we ought to be asking right now.
Sure. I mean, I think one of the main questions that would benefit people, and you don't have to be an economist, you don't have to be a financial person, is, you know, who benefits, right? Cui bono, right? If we see something happen.
Cui bono, one of my favorites. Cui bono.
Absolutely. So if you hear about a new program, you know, be a little skeptical. Think, you know, who would benefit from this? And then take a look at where that particular congressman or congresswoman's district is and see, you know, again, it would be helpful to see who's visited them in their office and that sort of thing. And I mean, I don't want to sound like somebody who's, you know, suspicious of all economics and all money and finance, because I'm not. I think money is a great thing. However, when it gets tainted in politics, when politics is imbued with it, that's where I think you're asking the question, who benefits? You know, who is the recipient of this benefit is important, because we know who's paying for it, and that's me and you and
it's
everybody.
It's always us. And you should ask, who is the real recipient? That's the other thing. The money.
Sure.
Never. You notice how much they've been promising us we need to fix our roads and bridges, our roads and bridges, our roads and bridges. They have a vested interest in keeping our roads and bridges a mess, so they can always use that as an excuse. We got to fix the roads and bridges, right?
Yeah, and that benefits big labor, benefits unions. And the other thing is, you know, you also, and I think you pointed out a really important thing there, and that is that many things that the American public are told by our political officials, especially in the realm of our finances, are left purposely ambiguous. For example, you often hear talk about billionaires not paying their fair share. You know, I'm in my early 50s. They've been saying that since I was a kid. But nobody will ever tell you what that fair share is. They'll allude to it, and taxes will change, but you've never been told what that amount is. Isn't that curious?
Yes, and here's another thing that just ripped my rear. Can I say that? Yes. It ripped my rear when, among the first things that the new House of Representatives did, that they wanted to defund the 88,000 IRS agents, and the first thing Chucky Schumer said was, those Republicans, they just want to benefit their millionaire and billionaire friends. I'm thinking to myself, this I've been hearing just as much as roads and bridges, right?
Yep.
The billionaire friends, how come nobody has ever updated that old saw to include Bill Gates, George Soros, Michael Bloomberg, Zuckerberg, all of them now who are acting to control and manipulate information and to take away our freedom are Democrats. They're part of the World Economic Forum socialism cabal. And I don't think that Chucky Schumer is going to go after any of them, do you?
No, of course not. And when I heard that there were 88,000 or 87,000 more IRS agents being hired, I mean, I told friends of mine, I said, you understand that, like, the wealthy, they know how to do their taxes. They pay a lot of money for that. And they've already been looked at. If there are 88,000 IRS agents being hired, it's to look at you
to
look at me more closely.
They're going after the middle class. Do you need 88,000 IRS agents to go after the tiny, preciously few billionaires
exactly
and gazillionaires?
Right.
There aren't very many of them. You don't need that many. But you see how that narrative and that constant refrain, it is pure poppycock. Obviously, you know that.
Absolutely.
You know what?
Yep.
I don't have much time. We do not have much time. We've got to wrap up the show in 5 minutes. But I'm looking at some of the books you wrote, and I'm just delighted to see some of the ones that you clearly wrote recently. One is The Gold Standard, Coronavirus. You wrote a lot on the coronavirus, which
I just think is marvelous.
There's one called Pandemics and Liberty. And I think people have been very slow on the uptake to realize that this whole fear-mongering of this virus and all of its many spokes, just like the picture of coronavirus itself, is being used as a battering ram to take away our liberty, and you wrote about it. Tell us about that book, if you would.
Well, Pandemics and Liberty is about the erosion of liberty that occurred with the many non-pharmaceutical interventions, such as lockdowns and all that sort of thing. That book I actually did a chapter for, but the other five I wrote with other authors. But I think the most important thing to know is that what we were told from the beginning of the pandemic is that you have a choice. You can either have a functional, robust economy, or you can have public health, and nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, having a strong economy is a component of public health to the extent that people can buy the things they want. They have, you know, we have a functional economy. We have exchange, all that sort of thing. So locking people in their homes, subjecting them to tremendous stress, alcoholism, drug abuse, suicide, all those sorts of things, keeping them from getting examined for other things like cancer screenings.
Yes.
That was the worst possible case scenario, and it is the most false dichotomy I have heard in my life. You don't
this
have to choose between public health and a functional economy.
Well, and if you superimpose or you overlay that with the fact that everything they forced upon us was damaging to our health physically, economically, spiritually, and emotionally. Abused people had to stay with their abusers. Children couldn't be educated. If sunshine and fresh air could help people build their immunities and stay healthy, they made sure to keep us all locked away in our homes. And then to top it off, to put a rag on everyone's face, so that not only could they act like zombies, feel like zombies, but not get enough fresh air either. I mean, this
that,
is an
and also
outrage.
They really, yeah, I mean, all of that is absolutely true. And also the way they sort of mobilized sections of parts of the population against others. You know, if you see your neighbor, you know, on their porch without a mask on, call the public health department, call the police, whatever.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that was
this
extremely,
is communism writ large.
I mean,
it's communism. What else is it?
Yep.
I mean, they instituted censorship, which is communism. They instituted people snitching on their neighbor. They instituted distrusting our fellow citizens. All of it is in the greater agenda, which sadly it's taken almost 3 years and more for some people to come around and realize that they were lied to. There's that old phrase, some people would rather be lied to than admit that they were lied to. Something like that.
Yep. And also that a lie will make its way around the world while truth is still getting its shoes on.
Yeah, that's true. You know, when I introduced you, and we're almost done here, American Institute of Economic Research, when I said AIER, my notes didn't have the name of it. It's American Institute for Economic Research. And I would love for people to go to your website and read more. Tell them where they can find you and follow you.
So we are at www.aier.org, and we have a presence on Twitter and on Facebook, and I also have a page on both on Facebook, and I have a Twitter account where I speak about these issues.
I'm so glad that you wrote those books on coronavirus, because we're just at the beginning of finding out what really went on. Thank you, Peter Earle, for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, that does it for this whole week of Spouting Off. Tune in every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern, when there will always be so much to spout off about here on Spouting Off.